You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we got a lot to get to, including a bunch of great questions from our listeners and a bunch of playoff stuff. But first, the Islanders have a new head coach, and the new voice that Lou Lamoriello was looking for was apparently the voice of Lane Lambert, who's been already working for the Islanders for 4 years. How are you feeling about the Islanders next season now knowing that Lane Lambert is the coach as opposed to Barry Trotz not being the coach?
Yeah, this episode is going to be an extravaganza of some sort. And I can't wait. I mean, I said to Emily before, I'm like, I don't know if I've ever been so excited to talk about something on this podcast, and it has nothing to do with the Islanders. Yeah. Tangentially it does, but I guess you can kind of understand what I'm talking about. We'll get there. But yeah, on Lambert, I think what I said last episode is kind of still how I feel, right? Like, I think everyone is going to overestimate the impact on ice that the coaching change will have, and meanwhile underestimate kind of the impact it has on the fan-team relationship, which was probably at its peak, especially in terms of my fandom. I don't think I can ever remember. Maybe 2001, 2002, that season was probably the last time that the team and fan base were on the same page as much as they were for the Trotz era. So there's that. But I do think that, it was a bizarre but comforting decision in terms of, I don't think Lane Lambert would take the gig if Barry Trotz was, let's say, railroaded, unceremoniously dumped, however you want to say that. So this kind of tells us a couple things. One, Lamoriello probably wanted to hire Lambert as Trotz's successor whenever the runway ran out on Barry, who, you know, still I'm going to miss horribly. And if he does, he interviewed for the Winnipeg Jets job today. So, like, if he does take another job, it's going to be really hard to see him in a three-piece suit behind another jersey. I can't say in another jersey, but in a three-piece suit behind another bench for sure. But at the same time, like, the Islanders aren't making a ton of changes to their roster. We're all hoping for some upgrades, whether they come via free agency or trades, however they come. So this group of players will know Lane Lambert. we're hoping that, you know, that the relationship between him and the players he's coaching is good. I'm assuming it is if he was hired. So it's comforting in that way where, like, we don't know what he's going to be like as a head coach. Nobody right. does. I mean, you don't know what the team would have done under Barry Trotz next season. You can't have the answer to that question. We'll know when they start playing. But you have to believe that the stuff that they've been, you know, that's been kind of worked into their DNA over the past 4 years under Trotz is going to still be there. And now, you know, hopefully Lambert is, you know, they get that new manager bounce. The bizarre part is that it happened the way it did, right? Trotz out of nowhere fired on a Monday, a week later, you'd assume that there was going to be a coaching search, but, you know, it took a week for this to once again, out of nowhere, be Lane Lambert. So you wonder, why didn't they just do it right away? So that is the bizarre part. And of course the new voice part is definitely bizarre, but Lambert kind of did walk back that statement, which he never does.
Yeah. He said, maybe new voice was the wrong phrase to use, which I was like, oh, wow. How about that? Yeah. He did kind of walk that back a little bit, but, you know, people are going to be harping on that, but I agree with you. Like, there's not a whole lot of sort of track record to go on aside from those three games that he coached with the Islanders in January when Barry Trotz was in Winnipeg because his mom had passed away. And then he tested positive for COVID himself. So it was Lambert in the driver's seat. And Lamoriello said he hung around the team a little bit more than he would normally. And he liked what he saw from Lane. So, you know, it's really hard to kind of feel one way or the other. My best friend texted me. He's like, what are we, you know, are we happy with Lambert? And I was like, I'm not mad. I'm not really happy. Like, it sort of is what it is. But I did think about that. And, like, I think I even wrote that at Lighthouse too, where it was like, you know, even if the players, so Larry Brooks had a column on Saturday/Sunday that intimated that the players were kind of, you know, getting a little bit, you know, tired of Barry's sort of all safe all the time style, want to open things up a little bit. And I could possibly believe that. But even still, even if they did want a new coach that was going to open things up offensively a little bit, it's not like they just stopped playing defense. Like, we've been down that road. I don't think anybody on this team who was on the team prior to Trotz would want to go back to, you know, giving up 300 or 400 goals or whatever it was in a season anymore. So they didn't want to do that. And so having Lambert there to continue keep teaching those principles is probably good. But as Lamoriello kept, you know, harping, like, he's his own man. He's got his own ideas and his own theories. So this is not like, you know, he's just gonna, you know, keep doing what Barry was doing, just, you know, with hair as opposed to Barry. I think it was Friedman or Marek brought up a good point too, that, like, prior to him getting his own job through three other jobs, Tampa Bay, Rangers, Vancouver, Mike Sullivan was seen as John Tortorella's guy. And, like, you know, he was Tortorella's assistant throughout all these other teams. And then he finally got a chance with the Penguins and he won 2 Stanley Cups. So, I mean, people are pointing out Todd Reirden taking over the Caps after Trotz left as his assistant getting elevated. But, I mean, there's also the Mike Sullivan comparison. So we don't know. It could go either way. But, you know, it's weird to have this new coach and, again, not have, like, a really strong feeling. I guess the good news is he's not Mike Babcock or Joel Quenneville. So that's
cool. I think it's like, if you look at it, you can look at it from 100 different ways. Number one is disaster averted, because I do think Babcock would have been a disaster across the board. I mean, and obviously, you know, you can't go near Joel Quenneville for a good reason, right? Like, another disaster. So you avoid those kind of, you know, I don't know what you call it, like mines or landmines or something. And then of course, the other options out there, there are some good coaches. Pete DeBoer, of course, like an hour later, let go. Not that I wanted him. I don't think he would really be the kind of guy that would work with this group all that well. But outside of that, then who are you looking for? Paul Maurice? Does that excite anyone?
Yeah.
No? Like, does it? Of course, like, there's going to be those assistant names that, like Lambert, you just don't know how they're going to do. But there wasn't really, you know, there wasn't a Barry Trotz out there, right? So, there wasn't someone who was going to come in and everyone was going to be like, this is a genius move. Maybe if Sullivan had got canned after the Penguins.
I was thinking that's why he was waiting for DeBoer or Sullivan, but
Yeah. I thought so too, but that's why I thought it was so funny that he did it on Monday. I guess Lou, this off season is going to be the Monday news dumps, Monday mornings. And I thought, you know, see what happens with Bruce Cassidy in Boston.
Right. Yeah.
See what happens with Sullivan. See right. what happens with basically all those guys that were dumped out of the first round.
Right.
But I think the more and more you think about it, like, the less and less concerned I become about the decision of hiring Lane Lambert. I'm still, of course, we'll still see if letting Barry Trotz go was a disaster. Like, we won't know that answer until the season gets underway.
Yeah.
But you do feel like this is probably, you know, like, it's a good almost half measure. And it's probably what the team needed. If truly they did want, like, a fresh set of eyes, they did want to stop hearing maybe the same thing over and over again, while also realizing, look, this is how this roster was built for Barry Trotz coach team. Mm. So we can't, like, just all of a sudden bring in, you know, Scott Gordon and the go-go system with right. Anders Lee and, you know, J.G. Pageau. These are Barry Trotz style players. So what you're getting is a Barry Trotz style coach who isn't Barry Trotz, I guess. So
yeah,
we'll see. There's not much else to say. As we were saying, like, it's almost like this in a weird, bizarre way. It's almost like the status quo, all the while still shocking the hockey world with a change to,
right.
to the organization.
And like Lambert had been on the Colorado job before Jared Bednar and the Anaheim job before Dallas Aikens and a couple of other jobs. And he has been a head coach in AHL with Milwaukee when he and Trotz were with Nashville. And so, you know, I think there's a lot to like, but also we don't really know. And my thing with coaches is always what do they do when there's the first bump in the road, whether it's a bad period or a bad stretch of games, you know, because it will happen. And, like, you know, as much as we love Barry and as great as he was here, let's not forget that, you know, in every season with the Islanders, like, they had that awful stretch of games where they just sort of forgot how to play their style of hockey. Like, it just happened every year, right? And, you know, then they would, in 2 years in a row, they got the sort of, you know, get press reset and go to the playoffs. And that was, like, how they stopped the slide, was just, oh, the playoffs are here. And then they become a different team. So, you know, this year it was, the slide was early. They were obviously, you know, half the roster was out with COVID or hurt. They didn't get back. They never got back into it. And then once they got everybody back, they started playing okay. The year before, you know, the first year they had that slump too for a little while. So, you know, let's check back in, you know, after 40 games or so and see where Lane Lambert is, and we'll have stronger opinions at that point.
And one other thing just real quick about Lambert and the switch. It also, I think, opens up the door to maybe a different kind of player in the open market, the free agency trade, whatever you want to say. Because let's say, you know, Kevin Fiala or William Nylander, Philip Forsberg, these kind of guys who are known as, you know, I wouldn't say Barry Trotz kind of players, right? Like, you can't really see Kevin Fiala, who's gifted offensive guy, great finisher, not terribly interested in doing the other stuff. You know, I don't think that Lamoriello would go after someone like him under Trotz, but, you know, now those doors maybe open a little bit more, which could be a little interesting in terms of that, because otherwise, like, you know, I'm sure this in my head, this is how it happens. Like, in the off season, you get a list of players, and every GM and coach goes over. It's like, oh yeah, like, Kevin Fiala would be great. William Nylander would be great. And then the Islanders are like, oh man, I would kill for Brad Richardson, or God, give me Blake Coleman and right. something like that. Like, so it does open up the door a little bit, I think, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's possible. But we'll get into that in our second half when we ask a lot of cool questions. We'll talk about some guys that maybe the Islanders could look at or something like that. So that's about it on Lane Lambert. Good luck and great head of hair. He also looks like Willem Dafoe, which, so he's got that going for him. So so you imagine the Islanders have hired the Green Goblin as their coach. So that's kind of cool. So we didn't really get to talk playoffs last time, and we wanted to get to a couple of topics here. Obviously, the first round is concluded. Second round is actually going on right now. The Panthers and Lightning are already at it. The Panthers beat the Capitals in six games. looked kind of dicey there for a little while, but they came through. The Lightning beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, who we're going to talk about extensively in a few minutes. And I just want to get to the other series before we get to them. The Rangers beat the Penguins. We'll talk about the Penguins in a second, too. And the Hurricanes beat the Bruins in seven. Hurricanes now are going to play the Rangers in a second-round series and hopefully dispatch them quickly. And then over in the West, the Oilers beat the Kings in seven games. They really stepped up in a big way. The Flames beat the Stars in seven games in overtime, despite the best efforts of Dallas goalie Jake Oettinger, who is a superstar now. But they made it through. And so the Battle of Alberta is on once again for the first time in a very, very long time. Meanwhile, the Blues are going to play the Avalanche. The Blues beat Minnesota in six games. People were surprised. Like, I can't believe they got past Minnesota. I'm sorry. When did the Wild become this sort of like giant killer? I don't understand. The Blues are really good. I don't know why people are kind of sleeping on them. Yes, they got to play the Avalanche, who destroyed the Predators and their third string goalie in a sweep. But I don't know. I think people are kind of sleeping on St. Louis a little bit. I think they have a chance to beat the Avalanche, although the Avs obviously are extremely very good. Just don't ask Stan Fischler about them because he really does not like the Avalanche. But the big thing that we wanted to talk about, two things. One is the Rangers beating the Penguins. The Rangers got very lucky. There was a lot of breaks here. I know it drove you crazy to watch this happening in slow motion in the seven game slow motion thing. I'm really sorry that this happened. Maybe the Hurricanes will take care of them. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, what does it look like?
I really don't want to get into it yet just because I'm really afraid, you know, it's the elephant in the room in Raleigh, North Carolina right now. And there was a lot of voodoo involved, I think, with the Rangers, and that's scary. You know, that's just really scary because I just can't picture them losing because they should have lost that series like 100 different ways and 100 different times. And every game, just like something catastrophic would happen to the Penguins, and whether it be Casey DeSmith getting hurt, whether it be Tristan Jarry getting hurt, then Casey DeSmith getting hurt, then Louis Domingue coming in, and like it's just Sidney Crosby, Brian Dumoulin, Ricard Raquel, like it was insane. And of course, you know, as is their right, because they won the series, they came back with 3-1. The Rangers are painting it and as a, you know, gargantuan comeback. This team just is so gritty and never quits. You did it against Louis Domingue. The game six goal, the game winning goal in game six, I think will go down as maybe worse than was it Ty Conklin in game seven against the Carolina Hurricanes? Was it Conklin? Was it UC Markkanen?
What about it was Conklin, but I was thinking you were going to say the
Tristan Jarry.
Yeah.
I actually think it was worse than Jarry. And I actually said this to Arthur Staple because what Jarry was doing, like, that's a brain fart, right? That's a mental mistake more than anything. Domingue, and that happens. Like what Domingue did in game six, and I don't know if you saw the goal because I know you don't like to watch the Rangers. there was a shot from the point from Kreider, maybe someone, not with like a minute and a half left. The game's going to overtime. It was basically a dump in just on the goalie. And Domingue went to catch it, but also had his blocker up there. And hit up his blocker before it got to his glove, bounced over his head and over, like, he was at the top of his crease, up and behind him, and then trickled in. It was a sign from above that there's no way that the Penguins were not winning, the Rangers were not winning the series. So that's enough about that, because I, like I said at the top of the show.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Before you get there, the reason I brought it up was because I it's not so much about the Rangers who I hope the Hurricanes take care of them. But the thing about the Penguins that has driven me crazy now is because they have followed the same pattern now since their Stanley Cup years, the back-to-back Stanley Cup years. They followed the same pattern. It's the same thing every year. It starts out, can the Penguins get one more? Does Sid and Gino have one more in them? We'll see. I don't know. It doesn't look good for them. And then they start the season and everybody gets hurt. Everybody's hurt. Not a single person is alive. This is also like the Mark Donk phase where they start calling up guys from the AHL and everybody's a superstar. They all score a goal in their first shift, but they can't keep this up. Everybody's hurt. They're done. Then all of a sudden they start reeling off wins and they're in first place. And it's like, how did that happen? And then the hurt guys start coming back. And then it's like, you can't bet against Sid and Gino in the playoffs. This is a dark horse team. Nobody's talking about this team. And then they lose in the first round. Like, this is the same thing that's happened every year. And like the team we're going to talk about in a second, like, you can keep talking about how good you are, but at the end of the day, you keep losing in the first round. Why is that? Because you can't hold a lead. You can't hold a lead in the series. You can't hold a lead in a game. The Rangers did to the Penguins what the Islanders did to them two seasons. Like, every time they had a chance to score, they would score. And then the Penguins would retaliate, and then they just wouldn't. Like, it's just, I don't know. It just drives me nuts that it's the same thing over again from them. But
you know what's crazy is, like, we were rooting for the Penguins in this series. So, like, I'm hearing it, and I'm just like, you just shut up.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Be a normal team for 5 minutes here and get the job done, rather than thinking like you're entitled to getting the job done because you have Sidney Crosby. And I will say, like, I truly enjoyed being able to root for Sidney Crosby for one reason. He was incredibly good.
Yes, he was
until he got hurt. Of course he did, because that's just how that series is going. I get it. Like, I get why people are mesmerized by him, and he gets, you know, all the accolades that he does, and it was fun to be a part of that. But it also made me think, God damn, did the Islanders do a good job against him in the playoff series.
Yeah.
Like, if he could do this every shift, if he's got the potential to, if you're a little soft on your gap, or if you have a bad pinch or a bad read, man, the Islanders just did such a good job in those two series against the Penguins.
I don't know. They did it. And they didn't mess around. But as you said, the big story of the first round is yet another failure of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have now lost in the first round for 6 years in a row. They went toe-to-toe with the Lightning. There's no shame in losing to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. That's bull. Don't buy that line. There is a ton of shame the Leafs should feel for losing this series. They had, as the Leafs always do, they had every possible advantage going in. They had a 60-goal scorer who might win the MVP. They had home ice. They had the best season they had had in franchise history, and they had home ice throughout the entire series. They had everybody healthy. Their goalie, who had missed a bunch of games earlier, came back. They were all healthy. They had did the Lightning play all that well in that series? No, not really. And here's the thing. The Leafs only needed to win 4 games. Like, that's all they needed to do, was win 4 games. The NHL said, we're going to put 7 more games on your schedule. You got to win 4. You can lose 3, but you got to win 4 of these. And they couldn't do it. One more time. They couldn't win a 4th game. They had a 3-2 lead. They could not win a 4th game after the regular season was over. And you talk about entitlement. Like, I don't know if the Leafs are a team that think they can win the Cup, or they deserve to win the Cup, because from what there's a difference. And what I'm hearing is a whole lot of deserve from these post game comments. Like, well, you know, we played real good. Why aren't we moving on? Cause you did. You never do. You never do. So what are you talking about? Anyway, you've been chomping at the bit for like 2-3 days to say a lot.
So I'm going to start this by saying that the Amazon, I watched the last episode of that Amazon documentary again last night.
Completely forgot that. I should watch that.
And let me tell you, that Amazon documentary is a great reflection of how the Leafs are covered by the Leafs media, which is basically just a PR marketing department at this point. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. to the point that when one of them, who we'll talk about, speaks kind of against what's going on, I'm like shocked. I'm like, wow, that's groundbreaking stuff from Nick Kiprio saying that maybe the Leafs shouldn't just keep running it back. But that documentary was perfect for the Leafs because it was completely geared. You can tell by the way it was set up, by the way it was narrated, by the way it was edited, and by the way it abruptly ends after the Leafs lose to the Canadiens, that the entire time that documentary was going on, it was geared to culminate with the Leafs getting past the first round and, you know, maybe winning the Cup. And because that's how they framed the whole thing, was like, this team's going to win. This team's going to win at the end. Don't worry. Like, they're going to win, because they're talking about how the guys in the rooms are battling adversity, how they all love each other. They're overcoming all these obstacles. They're slaying demons. And then they lose. And then this season, while there was no Amazon doc, every Leafs piece of content, and I am a huge loser because I read it. I read Leafs stuff as if they're almost like another team for me, because I can't get enough of the way this kind of incredibly strange, cringy media phenomenon with them, which is that they have an entire army of journalists and reporters who are basically acting like they're sitting in a locker stall next to William Nylander. Mm. They are, you know, when Sheldon Keefe is giving his pregame speech or his pregame presser, he's talking to me because I cover this team. And they all write their stories. They've all been writing their stories. They've all filed stories. They've all published these stories from opening night to games right before game seven, as if I'm writing this as if it's like a thread, a chapter by chapter book that is going to, the final chapter is going to be the Leafs advancing past the first round. Yeah. And they didn't. And instead of being like, holy shit, like they lost again. And last year when they lost in the first round, after that debacle, they said there's no way anyone could ever survive another one, just like after they lost to the Blue Jackets they said the same thing. And right. Just like when they blew the lead to the Bruins twice, like they said the same similar stuff, right? So instead of writing the final chapter as if, you know, okay, they blew it, they wrote the final chapter as if they won. Like it's incredibly strange. It's like they accomplished their goal.
Yeah,
which was to take another step forward by not embarrassing themselves in Game 7. That's how they're framing this.
Yeah.
And it's not the Leafs. Like the PR department for any team, whatever, they will do their best to when your team disappoints, when your team comes up short. Not the Islanders, because like, you know, they just don't kind of do that stuff under Lamoriello. But remember the Lightning thing, the Rangers letter, whatever. Mm. When teams come up short, they will do the necessary PR moves. Nobody buys it. But when the media is doing it for you, it becomes an incredibly different thing. Like if you read Chris Johnston's Twitter timeline today, it was all random Leafs saying how much they love being a Leaf and how they believe in the group.
Right.
There's nothing with
no context or right. commentary at all.
There's no like, oh yeah, Jack Campbell is really excited to be a Leaf. Oh, by the way, he loves being a Leaf. By the way, he's an unrestricted free agent who the Leafs probably can't afford because – Kyle Dubas made a big mistake by signing Peter Mrazek to a contract, right?
By the way, they're going to have to trade William Nylander to sign Jack Campbell to sign a contract. Exactly. Like,
it's there's none of that, and there's been some we talk about Sens Twitter a lot on this show, mm-hmm. and like how, you know, Islanders Twitter and Sens Twitter kind of being in lockstep when it comes to the Maple Leafs. Coming from a different kind of vantage point, Islanders obviously have been spurned by this team. Mm-hmm. Through the Tavares thing and then going back to Darcy Tucker. Ottawa's, of course, very small market team in Ontario, which is in the, you know, it's Leafs country, right? But there's a, you know, a bunch of great Sens accounts, and the tweet that really stuck out, I thought summed it up to me. Well, there's two. One was today by someone from the Canadian media who's basically basically said like, what the hell, like, what is it's, it sounded like almost like a cult, like he was calling out a cult. He said that he goes, it's from Arish Madani, who I guess is like a not a particularly well-liked journalist among Leafs fans, but he said he just watched the Dubas Shanahan press conference. They're speaking the way a franchise that's knocked on the door for a conference final or Stanley Cup would, not a team that can get out of the first round.
Yeah.
The disconnect with reality is truly bizarre. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is like these guys are all framing this like they just went on some they almost hiked Mount Everest.
Yeah. Right.
They've lost in the first round again. Like, and everyone's like, oh, they were there. It was so close. They lost by a hair. How can you blame them for losing to the
Tampa Bay Lightning? Close to what? Like, close to getting out of the first round?
And also, there's another option here. Like, you could have made it a not a coin flip series. You were up 1-0. You could have won game two going away. You were right. up 2-1. You could have won game four going away. You were up 3-2. You could have won game six. You were up 3-2 in the third period of game six. You could have won that game going away. You could have won game seven going away, but they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And nobody is saying that. Everyone's saying they were so close. Like this, Chris Johnston on his podcast, like I said, I am a huge loser. So I tallied it up. I was texting with our friend Kerry Haber earlier that I've listened. I tallied up the amount of hours I've spent since they lost on Saturday night, which was what? 10 p.m. let's say on Saturday night. the amount of hours I spent listening to Leafs podcasts, watching Leafs videos, see dangle type things, whatever. And it's 16 to 17 hours in between there since then. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I am a huge loser.
That's great. But it's fun. Fun.
Exactly. It's something I look forward to these days so much. And especially in a down year where, you know, I can't enjoy the Islander stuff because once again, there is a massive elephant in the room in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yeah. So I still can't even really think about the Islanders until that is taken care of. Hmm. So instead of focusing on this Shane Freud and Chris Johnston, once again, God bless the guy. If he ever blocked me on Twitter, I don't know what I'd do with myself because he provides me so much entertainment. On his podcast, he said two quotes that are just perfect. The first one was the Tampa Bay Lightning, hard fought loss in round one this year wipes away the stench from their previous failures in round one. And the second one was that he said, he goes, quote, and I quote, "I will go as far as to say they slayed their demons."
They slayed their demons that slayed them for the sixth straight time. Okay.
It's truly astounding.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes it fun, is it's like a look into another world. Like you said, like this sort of bizarre, you know, alternate universe where they lost, but they won. Like,
it's like North Korea kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a gaslighting almost. Yeah. Like, it's weird. But yeah, it's I listened to Real Kipper and Bourne, which is Nick Kyprios and Justin Bourne and their producer Sam. And now Bourne obviously is an Islanders legacy. He's like the one guy at Sportsnet that doesn't hate the Islanders. But I found it really interesting, and we were talking about this before we started recording, that like Kyprios has just gone all in. Like Kyprios is done. Like he's just completely had it with these guys. He wants, first of all, he wants apparently 6 Darian Hatchers on D, which I don't think is what you can do these days. But he's just like basically saying what we're saying, which is like, what have you accomplished? Like all this stuff is, you haven't accomplished anything. And like, you know, just to turn it on the Islanders real quick, and I'll do this again in a couple minutes too. But like, you know, one thing we learned under Barry Trotz is like, you either do it or you don't do it. Like, you know, we used to have these kinds of conversations too when the Islanders would make the playoffs and go to 6 games with the Penguins or 7 games with the Caps. And it was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. But like at the end of the day, you just didn't do it. So like, what are we even talking about? And of course, those Islanders teams didn't have nearly the kind of firepower and talent level that these Leafs do. And so that's, you know, Kyprios' whole thing is like, you guys have to, you have to do something. Like you can't just keep giving people nothing and expect them to, you know, still pay you money. But then Sam, the producer, and I don't know, maybe he's a lovely guy. I don't know. This guy is like the very prototypical crying Leafs fan that I'm talking about. Where like, you know, it's like, well, he said a thing on Monday, which was, he said, and I had to tell this to my wife because I couldn't believe somebody actually said this. He said, I want my team to get a break. Like Johnny Gaudreau had the break in overtime against the Stars and Connor McDavid had that break, you know, in game 7 against the Kings. I want my team to have a break. Dude, all your team does is get breaks. Yes. What are you talking about? Getting Austin Matthews was a break. Getting Mitch Marner was a break. Getting John Tavares was a break. Like, what are you talking about?
And you have the ultimate break, which is you are the richest team in the league.
Right. You
had the center of the hockey universe.
You had every break going for you for 7 games, and you threw them away. You threw them away.
And they keep talking about this bounce, like, oh, we didn't get a bounce here. We didn't get a bounce there. If we just get a bounce, like, we're into the next round.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, the Tavares goal that got called back because Justin Hall was in the crease. Okay, well, what about the other 59 minutes and 30 seconds of the game?
Just like, don't make it come down to that. And also, it's hockey. Every team in the world that's ever played a hockey game could say, ah, man, if that puck just didn't hop off a piece of like bad ice and hop and force me to go offside, I would have scored, right? It's truly incredible stuff. And
the Islanders lost game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals on the only shorthanded goal they gave up all season. They lost the game 1-0. So don't talk to me about missing a bounce. Like, right. Come on.
And you know? It's truly astounding that they've, because the media that these fans digest more than anything is, you know, like I said, like kind of that North Korea style, Kyle Dubas is Kim Jong-un stuff. Yeah. Like, oh, Kyle Dubas with another hole in one. He just set the course record 18 on the golf course today. Right. Like,
yeah,
it's because it's that, like, they're all, a lot of them are warped into thinking like they've been conditioned to think this way. So it's almost genius in some way that they've been able to sit, to recognize, like, if we get these writers, these quote unquote like progressive hip hockey writers at the Athletic to do our marketing for us, and for us being me, Kyle Dubas, you, Brendan Shanahan, and him, Sheldon Keefe. By the way, it's incredibly strange that they all refer to them by their first names on these shows. They're like, you know, like that's what Sheldon's thinking here, right? Like, it's very strange how everyone talks about these guys as if they're their buddies. I really wonder if when James Myrtle writes an article at The Athletic, or Jonah Siegel or Josh Cloak or one of the other 18 writers they have covering the Leafs on staff, if they send it to Dubas to be like, hey, is this cool to post? And he goes through it, sends back a couple edits and says, yeah, maybe you're a little too harsh on me. You might want to delete the part about the Nick Foligno trade that nobody talks about, right? Like, you might want to delete the Foligno trade, delete the Mrazek bit. And also Alex Galchenyuk, what a gem I unearthed there, right?
Right. Yeah, that was another one. Yeah, you sent me that. Somebody in The Athletic was like, look at all the gems he got.
Mike Amadio.
Mike Amadio. Another guy who's playing for somebody else now.
Yeah, he's playing for the Sharks, that Russian guy.
Oh, yeah. Barabanov. Yeah. And Alex Galchenyuk. Why is he a fine for Kyle Dubas? Because he scored like 5 goals that 1 week 2 years ago. Like, I don't. And he's the guy who gave away the puck in game 6 against the Habs last year, wasn't he? Or like, come on. I feel like, but no, I get what you're saying, because it feels like they're writing for, not that the team's obviously not going to read this stuff, because everybody, all the teams read everybody's stuff, but like, it seems like they're writing so that they get a compliment on what they wrote.
Right.
Whereas like somebody like our buddy Arthur Staple, who I'll just use, or even Kevin Kurz, like they write stuff about the Islanders, and if somebody's got a problem with it, they're going to talk to him about it. Charlie O'Connor at The Athletic too writes about the Flyers. Like, if somebody's got a problem with one of the things he's going to write, he's going to hear about it. And that's just part of the gig. But the Leafs guys, they don't seem to worry about that part of the gig, because they don't do that. But and anyway,
a couple more things. And I'll admit to this, like, I was so nervous about game 7 because I truly did going into round 1. I was like, you know, between the Leafs and the Rangers, if we could just get one of them out in round 1, I'd be happy. And I just assumed the whole time it would be the Rangers, because the Leafs are good. Like, they were good during the regular season, just like they were during the regular season last year. And also, by the way, real quick, talk about breaks. Last year, they had a Canadian division set up for them, basically.
Yeah.
Here's the easiest path to the Final Four that you can imagine in probably playoff history, and they still squandered it. Anyways, talk about breaks. But I thought, you know, the Leafs truly would, especially after game 1, I was like, damn, like, they're going to do it. And the whole series, I was sick about it, and I didn't watch game 7. I volunteered myself on Saturday night to go pick up dinner at somewhere 30 minutes away from my house, because I didn't want to watch or look at my phone or hear it. So I just didn't. And, you know, spent an hour and a half driving, and waiting for dinner, picking it up, whatever, that whole thing. Came home, watched Ozark with my wife, and she was basically yanking my chain the whole time. She'd just be like, oh, looking at her phone, because she knew how
right,
you know, retching, how much retching I was doing about the Leafs. And she's like, oh, that's too bad, with like 2 minutes left. I'm like, don't even start. And I mean, it was, if I spoke to a therapist about what I did on Saturday night, they would say, you need to likely just never watch NHL hockey again. You need to just stay as far away from the Toronto Maple Leafs as possible, because they consumed your life for a fortnight. And they did. And it's not even a fortnight. Like, I've started to freak out about their playoff matchups going back to March, like, maybe even earlier than that. Right. Like, God damn it. Right.
I'm hoping they play the Bruins because they have the Hex. And then I was like, oh, maybe they play the Panthers. They'd be even better. But, my wife and I were watching Top Gun. We decided, because we're going to go see the sequel in a little while. I also did not want to watch the Leafs at all. And I'm like, let's watch Top Gun. She had never seen it before. She was not impressed. She's like, nothing happens. I'm like, stuff happens. It's just, you know, it's joshing up in high, you know, 10,000 feet or whatever. They can't go below the hard deck, 10,000 feet. Anyway.
I mean, it was worth it, though. Like, all that retching.
Sure.
All of it, you know.
Now we got a whole summer of Schadenfreude, like you said.
It's just so worth it. And I turned on the game as the Lightning cleared it, because I saw there's like 11 seconds left. Of course, the first thing I see the first bit of game action I see from the game is Tavares in the slot. He was facing the wrong way, but it was like 8 seconds left. And he just like threw it towards the net.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I jinxed them. But of course they ended up clearing it and whatever. Mm. I watched the end and I just immediately started to just gorge myself on
this
content, starting with Steve Dangle, going all the way down the list. Mm. And the fact that I'm not done really tells you that my priorities are completely out of whack, but like I said, it's so much fun. The lockout clear out day is just as much fun as the elimination day because of the way everything is framed by the media. More and more stuff will come out and I really do appreciate all the people who are like, let's run it back.
Yeah. That's another thing
the first thing that everyone tweeted was because, you know why? Because on Sunday on 32 Thoughts, Jeff Marek asked Elliot Friedman before the game seven even happened, if the Leafs lose, do you think everyone's going to, you know, the people will lose their job? And he said, no. Like, if you have to set that up before game seven, you're already doing the work for, you know, the marketing, the PR department for them. And then everyone, of course, is like, yeah, like, we can run it back. It was whatever. You can't run it back. You don't have a goalie. Your defense is, you have a 38-year-old UFA defenseman. Jake Muzzin can't stay healthy. He's got $5.6 million of your cap space. You have an 11 million. I mean, we haven't even talked about John Tavares. We get to part two because I know we have the mailbag to get to.
Should we move him to the wing? Yeah. Should they trade him? Should they give him? They strip the captaincy from him? Oh, he's going to hear it this summer.
Oh, and it's great. And last summer it was Steve Simmons who talked, during the regular season this year that Steve Simmons was like going in on Tavares, but this year it's everybody and.
He had two great games though. Game six and seven, he looked great. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, right. Like that was thank God he did, because if he didn't, man, because he was hearing it early in that series, like even when they were winning. And yeah, I mean, so there's a lot to look forward to on that front because he's got 3 years left on that deal, which is really interesting. We're more than halfway through that deal, which is really just dawned on me today. And it's $11 million of cap space. Marner and Matthews are both right around that number. One, I think, is like 11.6. The other's like,
yeah.
So if Tavares is eating up that much cap space, like they really don't have much that they can do. And Dubas, you know, like they did a good job over the offseason of like hitting on lottery tickets. You're not going to be able to knock it out of the park with David Kampf and Michael Bunting and whatever.
Bunting's a UFA too, by the way.
No, he's got one more.
Does he?
He was too. Yeah. So like, but like Mikheyev is a free agent. Andre Kasha is a restricted free agent. Their defense, like I said, needs an overhaul because Giordano is a free agent. And Muzzin is just, you know, he's banged up and expensive. And then, of course, yeah, the goaltending. So, like, okay, what do you mean run it back? Nobody here is saying that, like, we should trade Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews. Like, that's not what saying, like, hey, you might want to make changes means. What it means is that, you know, there are going to be changes around those guys. So yeah, of course they're going to run it back with Marners and Matthews, but the rest of the group, like it's hard to, Matt, they just set the franchise record for points in a regular season. How are they going to get better than that? Because in their cap situation, like you can't, like it's hard to, and I'm just talking about from a probability standpoint, like they're going to be better than the best regular season they ever had. I don't know.
It just cracks me up that like here they are, this entire media contingent, except for Nick Kiprios, patting the Leafs on the back for doing the same thing they've done in the last couple of years, saying, no, it's different this time. They played well in all seven games. Okay, well, spectacular. That's great. Meanwhile, the Florida Panthers, who had not won a playoff series since my sophomore year in college, 1996, they went out. They also had the best regular season in franchise history with a guy who could be considered an MVP candidate. And knew that they had, you know, obviously the media pressure in Florida is not what it is in Toronto. They knew that they had to go out and perform and at least win a round in the playoff to show that, you know, they had done something. And they went out and they did it. They did it. And okay, the Caps aren't the Lightning, but like the Lightning really weren't the Lightning in that series either, too.
Yeah, like, when talking about breaks, like Braden Point clearly wasn't himself.
Yeah.
It took Vasilevskiy till game seven to have a Vasilevskiy game.
Right.
If the Islanders got that version of the Lightning, they would have won the Stanley Cup. That's talk about breaks. Like you didn't get Victor Hedman took game one off, and then you know anytime that they need a win, he would turn it back on. But they didn't get the Lightning. They got They got beat by a mediocre version of the Lightning.
Right.
So and none of that's coming up.
Right. I mean, nobody listening to this is going to forget what Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh did to the Islanders in back to back. I mean, the year in the bubble, Victor Hedman was like the Terminator. That guy couldn't be stopped. I mean, the Islanders did the best they could, but my God, that guy was insane that year.
He scored like 83 goals in a series. Right.
And then as a defenseman. And then Ryan McDonagh played the same part last year. Like, he was great, you know, but it's just, and so they went out there and did it. And like, again, taking it back to the Islanders too, like in the first trots here, 2019, the Islanders made the playoffs. They had missed the playoffs for 2 years in a row. They were playing the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team that had just come off. They were, you know, 2 years removed from winning back-to-back Stanley Cups with a bunch of Hall of Famers on it. And they had the best record, you know, that they had in a long time. And they went out there and they swept the Penguins, just swept them. Like, they didn't let them up off the mat for four games. Like, so what are we even talking about here? You either do it or you don't do it. And for whatever reason, that team doesn't do it. And like you said, you could say run it back all you want. Again, this phrase has now been ruined forever by these people. You could, but you can't, because there's no money. Like, there's no money there to run it back. So I don't get it.
It's not over yet, which is both exhausting, but also great, because it's going to kill a lot more time for me over the next few days as more, you know, these exit interviews are Zapruder filmed, even though they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And we didn't even talk about the best line from the post game press conference.
Oh, yeah.
When Sheldon Keefe said that they got more respect in the handshake line, and instead of somebody like questioning it, Chris Johnston and Luke Fox decided, wow, this is a seminal quote.
Yeah.
He's rallying the troops. Like, he's picking their chins up for them, boys. You got to
respect.
You got a respectful handshake from the team that just beat you.
Right.
Oh my, like if Barry Trotz, or it would have never come from Barry Trotz, but if Jack Capuano, Doug Weight, Scott Gordon, Steve Sterling, whoever you want to talk about, like, if they said something like that after a playoff series loss when you haven't won one since 2004, I would have been so ashamed. That would be, that to me is like the lowest point, I think. And I don't feel any embarrassed. Like, I don't really know any Leafs fans at all. Like, I don't. So, which is nice, because I don't have to like be concerned for them, their well being, but. I don't ever feel bad for them, because they're just incredibly annoying. And as I'm painting them with a broad stroke, but whatever. The one time throughout this entire situation, going back to that Bruins series to now, going back to the Capitals series, whatever, the one time I maybe felt a shred of empathy for them was when Keith said that.
Yeah. You know, after the Lightning won last year's cup, I want to say it was Nikita Kucherov, but it might have been somebody else. They asked, you know, what was it like? And they, or asked them some question, and they basically said that the Islanders gave them more trouble than any other team. And nobody brings it up ever again. Meant absolutely nothing at the time. You know, I remember thinking like, oh, that's nice. Like, okay.
So made it feel worse. Honestly,
yeah.
Right? Like, we know. We went through it too, buddy.
So they played seven other teams, and the Islanders were the only one that gave them a run for their money. Okay, that's great. That and 250 gets you a ride on the subway. Like, that's, you know, that's what that means. So that, it just goes to show, again, like, the total difference in, like, you either do it or you don't, and they just haven't done it. Okay, we've done enough Leafs talk. We appreciate you sticking with us for all that. We've had a lot to get off our chest.
We'll be back next week for more.
Yeah, definitely.
Leafs lunch.
We definitely recommend you checking out Chris Johnson's podcast on The Athletic. Steve Dangle, obviously, there. I can't stomach Dangle. I'm sorry. But Kipper and Bourne is fun. So you can listen to that, and especially if you want to hear Nick Kiprios going in on the Leafs. But when we come back, we will have our first and probably only ever mailbag segment on Islanders Anxiety. So come back with us and hear some of our great listener questions.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Before we get to our question and answers, we have to have a word from our sponsors. First, as always, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Use the code Long Island to save 10% off anything in the store. And check it out. I mean, it's playoff time, but you can always rock some cool New England Whalers or New York Golden Blades stuff during the playoffs. And that is at VintageIceHockey.com. Betway is the official betting partner of the NHL. Play Big Pick for free anywhere in the U.S. or play for real. Residents in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Idaho, and Iowa only. Click the link in the podcast description to join. Must be 21 or over. Terms and conditions apply. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Delicious Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, and Rosé, all under $15 a bottle. Available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena, which is still open, even though the Islanders aren't there. So if you're going to a concert or something, check out some wines from the Pinot Project. Please play and drink responsibly. Okay, we got a lot of great questions here. Thanks to everybody who sent stuff in. We really appreciate it. We're going to try and get to as many as we can. It's been a long episode, but you know what? Why not? It's we got a lot of time and it's, you know, only so many playoff games to go around. So we're going to start with a cool question from Lester, who asks about Lane Lambert. Is Lambert enough of a new voice that the Isles would be able to improve upon success with Trotz? What insight can we gain from his head coaching stint in the past? At least does this resolve the previous questionable management of young talent? As we said before, we don't really know. Is he a new enough voice? Lou Lamoriello seems to think so. What insight can we gain from his head coaching stint? Probably not a whole lot. And does he resolve the previously questionable management of young talent? I didn't think Barry Trotz's management was that questionable. Noah Dobson led the team in ice time this year. Yeah, everybody wants to point to Wahlstrom, but I mean, the guy got plenty of chances. He played a lot of games and he just didn't do much with it for most of the season. So I don't know, but I do have a problem with Newsday's headline writers because Andrew Gross wrote an article and it talked about his relationship with Barzal. And I read it and it didn't say anything about that at all. I was expecting to say like, you're buddies or friends, but it didn't say anything like that. So that sort of bothers me. So what do you think? I mean, you know, we already talked Lambert.
Yeah, but I think the last part of the question is more about how does it should light a fire under.
Right.
I guess, you know, this is about Oliver Wahlstrom, right? Like it should light a fire under him. If anything, which is fine. Like that's part of what happens when you get a new coach is in any sport that some players just end up getting more time and a new role and more trust, less trust, whatever. So I think the onus is actually on Wahlstrom more than Lambert, right? Because hey, you got a new coach, so
yeah.
you clearly weren't gelling with the old one. Figure it out, buddy.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, that's a good point. Okay, Jeff asks us, what do you say is the likelihood that we see the quote hockey trades this offseason that Lou has alluded to? How much change do you think we'll see this offseason via trade or free agency to address the team's needs, filling in the D, more kind of stuff like that? I mean, Lou has to make trades. Like he said it. He's got to do something. Whether or not we like those trades, I don't know. How much change we think? I mean, that's hard to say. There's got to be at least, I would say, a couple of new players. I mean, new players, not like, you know, guys from Bridgeport or something like that. I don't know. That's a tough one. But he said he was going to make trades. So he better make with the trades. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I would say it's more likely than not we see hockey trade, and the only kind of reason I have a little bit of pause is that, you know, he did just make a big shakeup, obviously,
right?
So he could say, you know, we that was the big change that we made, right? And it was a big trade, a change, and like last year it was kind of a foregone conclusion that the team was going to upgrade that second pairing on defense, and they never did. So just because like it all signs point to a trade or something happening doesn't mean it will.
Yeah.
But I would say more likely than not. And I'm hoping for like an active kind of off season in that regard, but
yeah,
whether it happens or not. I mean, when's the last time the Islanders had a really active off season?
2014.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Like Hrabowski, Kuhlman. I mean, because like the Letty Boychuk thing, that was the same, right? Same offseason. Yeah. So it's like that was the one, right? Like, so it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time. And that leads us to a question from Mike, who asked, what do you think the over-under is on trades Lou will actually make before next season? 3.5. I got to laugh at this, not because of the question. The question's a great question, but it's funny to me because setting the over-under at 3.5 is kind of wild because Lou, in 4 years running the Islanders, has made 4 trades. He was Matt Martin. Then we waited 2 years for Andy Green and Pageau. And then a year later was Palmieri / Zajac. That's amazing. It. Those are the trades. So if he was to almost hit, you know, that's 4 trades. If he was to do 3.5 in one summer, that would be like a mind blowing thing. So I'm going to take the under and say it's going to be more like 2. Yeah. But what do you think?
I would say so too. I think you're looking at it as there's going to be a trade, hopefully an upgrade next to Barzal, and then an upgrade on defense. So that's where what I think. I mean, maybe like a minor trade as well to get us to 3. But so yeah, I would say 2.5 would probably be the,
well, there you
the
go.
Line. Yeah.
We're both way in the pessimistic, glass half full section of that. But that will be pretty interesting. Lawrence asks us, 3 most urgent moves Lou needs to make over the offseason. Well, you just said 2 of them. Somebody to play with Barzal, puck moving D. You know, I would say, I guess, you know, it's easy to say just like a depth person or something. I think what they really need to do is kind of like find a person who can spell Casey Cizikas every once in a while. And it's not like, you know, I think Casey ended up having a pretty good year, but it was a little rough for him at patches. And I think that, you know, part of the problem is they don't have a guy who can play those minutes. And so Pageau or somebody ends up getting double shifted. I think they need a reliable fourth line center to slide in every once in a while and help those guys out when they get hurt. Whether that person can, you know, follow in the footsteps of Casey Cizikas, I don't know. Aside from the first two, like you said, I mean, is there somebody else that some other position you think they're looking at?
It makes sense. Like they probably just need to upgrade that fourth line depth. Yeah. Like they need to create some competition probably between Johnston, Clutterbuck, and Martin. Like it shouldn't be now that Trotz is gone, it shouldn't be a foregone conclusion that those three guys are penciled in every night where they're healthy. I also think, you know, this is maybe a little bit of a cop out because it's more off ice, that the team needs to kind of mend their fences with the fan base a little bit after the season, the Trotz thing. And I think people are a little perturbed with I've just been reading and hearing from people who are, you know, season ticket holders or whatever, that not that like the game experience at UBS Arena is great, right? Like the arena is great, sight lines are perfect, everything like that, but like the kind of, I guess, ancillary tangential stuff has not been great. The parking, obviously, they never got the garage fixed.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so, where's that garage?
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Like, and even like there's like that plaza they're supposed to be building, but they can't build that until people get the garage fixed, I guess, right? Yeah. But I think they kind of oversold the amenities part of the arena. I didn't really notice this until I think I saw it on Reddit. Like, people were complaining about that and like their season ticket reps maybe like not being great, but I wasn't paying attention because like that kind of stuff, I just like to go to the games like to make sure I have a good sight line. We've been spoiled by Nassau Coliseum. Like, all I care about is that it's loud and you can see everything, and UBS Arena ticks those 2 boxes for me. So I would say something like, you know, basically to mend fences with the fan bases is one of them. And guess what? One way to do that is to bring in a superstar via trade or whatever. So
that's a good point. And that's such a good point. I'm going to tack on one more myself. Change the damn goal song. It's enough already. It's enough. That song sucks and it's been around way too long. Okay. Jack asks us, give us predictions. You talk about superstars. Give us your predictions of who the Islanders acquire for 1, a first line winger, 2, a puck moving D-man. And then a bonus question, true or false, the Islanders fail to make the playoffs next season. Lamoureux and Lambert are fired. I will take part 2 first. No. I don't think I don't know what it would take for the ownership to fire Lou Lamoriello, but I don't think it would be another playoff free year, and I don't think Lambert would have that happen to him in year 1. Predictions for the first line winger, you know, my heart says a bunch of different people love to see Johnny Gaudreau, but it's not going to happen. I think they're going to make a play for Brian Rust. I'll be honest with you. I feel like that's a guy they're going to try for using the Crosby excuse. Puck moving D-man. Boy, I don't even know. I can't even name you one. The only one I can name is Devon Taves. So I don't even really know anyone. And I don't want to go down that, open that whole thing again. Are there two guys that jump out to you? Maybe I'm missing something.
I think the puck moving D-man, like Chychrun is the one that comes to mind right away. I think that there are going to be other guys. I think that you can maybe get from like Vince Dunn again.
Yeah.
You know, like someone like that. Like you can probably.
I'm not even really sure who's available, I guess.
Yeah. And like, I think someone like, you know, Cam Fowler, by the way, you know, Nick Leddy is absolutely coming back next year. You can all pencil him in as the Islanders' number six defenseman next to Scott Mayfield.
You're jumping questions. We got a Nick Leddy. Oh,
really? but like, I think Chychrun will probably be he's like the most obvious one. And the one that kind of sticks out. I like, Travis Sanheim from Philadelphia. If they truly are going to, if they don't land Gaudreau and they don't get Trotz, I think the there's no way that they're going to rebuild kind of narrative is overblown that we keep hearing, because they probably will. And then I think like the Wild are a team where you can probably do some, you know, you can get someone. I think Jonas Brodin has a no movement clause, and Matt Dumba I think plays the wrong side. But like those guys, like if you can get them, then you can maybe make them work by moving someone else out and whatever. Yeah. But and then the first line winger, man, I would just love you know, William Nylander, just because it would piss off the Maple Leafs fans, and he's not that expensive in terms of his cap hit. And I think the Islanders can kind of give Toronto a package that they'd like, which is, you know, maybe it's Mayfield plus the Leafs would need a cheap, you know, cheap good defenseman, and Scott Mayfield exactly that, and they would love him. I'm talking about Darian Hatcher, right? I think true or false, the Islanders fail to make the playoffs, there's no way Lou Lamoriello is gonna be fired, right? Like he's either gonna sail off in the sunset if the Islanders need to rebuild, or he is gonna stick around if they're good. And I would assume that Lambert is probably here for no matter what happens next year. So
I'm going to throw out one more name, puck moving D-man, Chris Letang.
Can you imagine that? Oh my
Lord. No, I could not. maybe 5 years ago, that'd be great, but not now. I'm just, before, because we don't really have any other questions like this, I'm going to throw out a name that I think might be available via trade. And I think the Islanders could get him probably not for a whole lot more than Scott Mayfield or something like that. Jonathan Marchessault, I think, would be a really interesting pickup. He's like a Corsi god for those that are still looking at that kind of thing. I think he could play with Barzal for sure. He drives play. And Vegas is consistently, constantly, irritatingly up against the cap. So it probably wouldn't take much to get him. So that's another option there. I haven't seen anything like that, so I'm going to throw his name out there. Rust is a UFO.
The Knights are really interesting in that regard too, right? Like they're going to need to move some guys out. Sure. Yeah. So like, they might, remember they traded Nate Schmidt, everyone's like, how can they do this? You know, and then he didn't have a great season, but, you know, they have like, you know, Shea Theodore who can play both sides and he's really, really good. So they don't want to trade him, but they might just have to, because they're not going to trade Barkstone, or, you know, maybe the Islanders get Max Pacioretty finally.
I was going to say Pacioretty too. Yeah.
He's definitely another one that I think can,
Riley Smith too is another guy too. So, But Marchessault jumped out at me as a guy the Islanders probably could and should target. Okay, moving on. John asks, do we believe any big-time free agents sign with the Islanders to give them more, quote, pop-up front? I can picture Barzal's new deal getting done as the biggest signing of the offseason and feeling glad but disappointed. That second part is 100% totally an Islanders thing. Yeah. So that's why I wanted to include this. Free agents are going to be a tough sell to the Islanders no matter what. I don't know. You know, that's one thing with Lambert. I don't know if he really moves the needle. Like you said, maybe people didn't want to play for Trotz and they might want to play for Lambert. He's got a great reputation among a lot of players. So I don't know. I look at these guys that are available this year and I just, maybe Fiala possibly, I guess, but Gaudreau is not going to sign with the Islanders because he's going to make $1 billion. So he's out there. So I don't know how depending on your definition of big, I don't know if any of those big free agents are going to sign here. I just can't see it because I've never seen it before, but you never know. So
yeah, I think you're probably right. I think, like, what do you consider big?
Right.
Because, like, there's I think you could see a world where, you know, Vincent Trocheck, who can play center and the wing, like, is he big? Would you consider him as a big signing? Would you consider, like, Ricard Raquel a big one? Because I think that.
I have Raquel, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's kind of, like, what I'm assuming, like, the Islanders will get, like, one of those guys, like, maybe, like, David Perron before they trade him back to the Blues. and then, like, I mean, Fiala and would be great, too. Like, but I just, it's hard to see. So I think that's probably the right way to approach the offseason is to go in thinking, hell, if they sign Matt Barzal to a long extension, glad but disappointed is much better than disappointed and also, but or sad but disappointed.
Yeah, that's right up there with the, well, we're getting the guys back from injury is our trade. That's the worst. That's the last thing you ever want to hear. Mark asks, how are we to feel if the only free agent signing Lou makes is bringing back Nicoletti and nothing else? Here's the thing. the whole idea of trading Nicoletti was to upgrade his position. They didn't do that, as you said, and as we've said all season long. If they bring back Nicoletti a year older, they're still not upgrading his position. I love Nicoletti. I'm a fan. I could totally see him, like you said, coming back. If they bring him back on a cheap deal because he misses the Islanders so much, I mean, I wouldn't be mad about it. It would be fine. I hope he plays a reduced role and they actually do upgrade that position. If he's the only free agent signing Lou makes this year, I will be absolutely furious. So let's make sure that doesn't happen.
Furious, but I'm surprised. Right?
Yes, like, exactly.
And we won't find out until you don't hear a word about Nicoletti's future until September when they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, we signed Nicoletti.
Free agency comes and goes without hearing Nicoletti sign anywhere. He's 100% signing with
now. I think it's like, if, like, you put it right, if say the Islanders go out and they get, you know, Jacob Chychrun or, you know, someone, you know, Shea Theodore or someone like that, right? Like Josh Morrissey. And then they bring in Nicoletti as the number six guy to play with Scott Mayfield on a third pairing. Like, then I think that's kind of a shrewd move. Like, sure the Islanders have Robin Salo and Samuel Bolduc, who we want to see for play. And you always have to assume that young Buck Sebastian Aho. We still don't know whether or not he's an NHLer.
Yeah,
he's
gonna any of those guys really.
Yeah, but like they have those guys, but like Nicoletti is someone that you can. His next contract is going to be the, you know, 1 year, basically $1 million or veteran minimum, plus the caveat of you'll probably be the 6-7 guy. Like, don't be surprised if you're in the press box for a bunch of games, and that's fine as long as he's not in the Zdeno Chara role.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but for Letty, that role would be power play stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's again, we spent 4 years complaining about how bad Nicoletti was on the power play. So I don't necessarily want to see that. But again, bringing him back on a veteran minimum wouldn't be the bad idea. But bringing him back, making him the only guy you sign this summer would be a bad idea. Tim, otherwise known as Cheapness, a longtime Lighthouse Hockey commenter, asks, was there a rift between Barry and the players? Or is it more like that the rift may have been philosophical between Barry and Lou? He also asked if Lou can bring himself to part with Josh Bailey. Again, part two first. No, Josh Bailey ain't getting traded. Sorry. You know, was there a rift? I don't know if you'd call it a rift, but I mean, the things that I've read, and I mean, I read what everybody else read, Brooksy and Friege. You know, I think that maybe that play style had kind of worn on the players and they wanted to open things up a little bit more, particularly late in games. I mean, the Islanders lose a lot of games by kind of, you know, one or two goals and never seems like they really deviate from things. So I think they just maybe want to open that element up because after 4 years, that's hard, man. It's hard on the body. It's hard mentally. It's hard emotionally. They played a lot of games over a course of time. And I think that's what it is. I don't think it's a rift in that, man, I can't stand this guy anymore. I think, you know, it's just that the players got a little bit tired of that, you know, that's my theory.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. And, but we'll just never know until Barry Trotz's biography comes out, I'm guessing. And of course he's not going to be able to part with Josh Bailey. I mean, I can't part with Josh Bailey. That would be tough, man. I do like that they're doing some, they had like Clark Gillies night and Bailey and Clutterbuck were at the Yankee game together. So he's still doing the rounds. Josh is never going anywhere.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I lost it. I thought I had it here, and I apologize for not remembering the person's name, but somebody asked if this was the biggest swing for coaches in the looks department to go from sort of bald, round necklace Barry Trotz to like taller, thinner, full head of hair Lane Lambert that I can remember. I mean, Scott Gordon and Jack Capuano were two kind of complete opposites too.
And going from Steve Sterling, I mean, it was Brad Shaw, but like, right. Going from Peter Laviolette to Steve Sterling too, like,
right, yeah.
I guess Sterling kind of looks like he could be Peter Laviolette's dad.
Yeah,
in a way.
I guess. Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. So
I'm trying to think of other ones around the league.
Yeah,
too.
No. There's a lot up there. I mean, even Waight and Capuano were kind of different. But the other thing too that people keep mentioning about Lambert, he's only 2 years younger than Trotz, but he looks much younger. So
that's so great.
Yeah. Another Josh Bailey question from Josh Bailey Fan Club. Odds that Josh Bailey has a burner Twitter account? Probably zero. He's probably, I don't think he has a burner Twitter account. I hope he doesn't. His wife might, but he probably doesn't. So he's too smart for that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's one of my favorite things about him.
Yeah.
Is that he has zero social media. It's like he, considering his arrival to the Islanders and then how his career started, and how he's become a kind of a cult icon and also the most hated Islander of all time at the same time, is like, God bless him for not having it. He I wonder what he thinks the fans, like the general feeling of the fan base amount around him is. He might know spot on. Like he might be able to, because he's such a smart dude, but it's truly one of my favorite parts about him is that he doesn't have any social media at all.
Yeah. Yes. It makes him very mysterious and also very, you appreciate him more for just doing what he does. And then just, that's it. Yeah. He goes off and does, you know, anything else that he wants to, and you never hear about it. Stephen Smith, our Lighthouse Hockey's own, asks a great question. Do the Isles make the playoffs next season? And if so, which current East playoff team misses them to replace? I would hope that they do make the playoffs and that the Rangers are the team that miss. I can see the Caps missing. They got a lot. It's a weird team. I mean, obviously, Ovechkin's still there, but you know, Backstrom is making a lot of noise that he's been hurt. Their goaltending situation is very fluid. Their D is going to get older. I could see them missing, and I'm not going to bet against the Penguins missing the playoffs because they never missed the playoffs, no matter how much people complain about it. So I could see that happening. I hope they make the playoffs because if they don't, that's going to be a problem, but we'll see.
I said this before this season. And I was wrong, but I was actually incredibly wrong, as all four teams above them got 100 points. It's got to be the weakest division they've played against in 20 years, maybe, next year, because, like you said, the Caps, like Backstrom could be gone. Like they'll still be the Caps, but they have a lot of issues to sort out. Justin Schultz is a free agent. Like who knows? Their prospect pool, I don't think, is all that great. Then you have the Penguin situation where Malkin and Letang and Rust are probably gone. Sure, Crosby and Gensel are great, but that completely changes that team. And we also know that their goaltending, as good as Jari was last year, he's still, you know, pretty much a question mark. So then the Rangers, like we can probably call it one of the luckiest seasons that we've ever seen from them. They have they had a goalie who had a Dominic Hasek level season. So he's not like it'd be pretty bewildering if he does that again. It's more likely that he doesn't, which means that he probably won the Rangers, 16 points on his own this year. So you take those 16 points away, half of them, and all of a sudden the situation becomes a little more dubious with them. I think the Hurricanes are probably the favorite to win the division again next year. Yeah. Devils, who's playing goal? So
Devils, by the way, won yet another lottery. So they're picking second this year. So some other superstar will be end up there, and they'll probably still miss the playoffs by 20 points.
So you know, the Devils, let's say the Devils are 40% yes, 60% no. The Flyers are a mess. The Blue Jackets are rebuilding.
Yeah.
So like the path is there. So I would say it's much more likely than not the Islanders make it. And I think that that you can really make a case for, I would say Washington is probably the most likely. But you can make a case for basically, you know, even the Bruins, like they'll be better. I mean, they won't be better, but they'll make the playoffs, but like what if they lose Bergeron? Like, that's right. A huge problem for a team. Yeah. Like, he's one of the best players in the league.
So there's
going to be a path there. I think we'll probably start to see that changing of the guard that the West saw maybe a few seasons ago when the Sharks came.
Right, it was all California. Blackhawks
started to miss the playoffs, and the other teams started to replace them.
Yeah. I don't know. Every once in a while, I reminded that all eight teams in the playoffs this year from the East all had over 100 points, which has never happened before. Yeah,
outrageous.
Yeah. So there you go. Another Lighthouse Hockey alum, Travis, asks, if you could bring back any New York Islanders skater in his prime for 22-23 season, but he has to be on the ice for every second of penalty kill for the entire season, who would it be? The answer, if he's going to play on the penalty kill, the answer is Brian Trottier. Sorry. Like, and that's a boring answer, but it's got to be Brian Trottier because everybody, he did everything. So why not have him be out there? Anybody from maybe not 40 years ago that you had picked for the same question?
I guess I missed his era. Like, for the dynamic penalty kill unit of course, like Grabner and Nielsen, of course, were terrific on the PK. But I'll go with Michael Pekka. Him and Bates as a pairing on that team were fantastic in that first season with Pekka. Like, I feel like he was built to kill penalties.
Nice. That's a good one. Another one that I thought I had in here, but I don't. Who's your favorite? And I apologize to whoever sent this in. It's a great question. Who's your favorite alliterative Islanders name? So for me personally, it's Adriana Coyne. I don't know if anybody something along those lines. I don't think the Islanders have had a whole lot.
I have one. I saw that question come in, and the first name that came to my mind, he's one of my favorites ever, Randy Robitaille.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one right there. That's a classic. That's a weird Islander right there. Adriana Coyne, not a weird Islander, but Randy Robitaille, he's getting an episode at some point. Alex Richmond, who I've talked to via email, is one of the few Islanders fans in Ottawa. He asked an interesting question too. Like, what were the best players who would have been amazing Islanders? There's a lot of great players out there that, never were Islanders, but like, how great would his example was Ron Francis. Like, how great would it have been to see Ron Francis as an Islander? Obviously, I'm a huge Ron Francis fan. That would have been fantastic, but I'm going to go with another ex-Penguin. How about Jaromir Jagr? So once again, the whole Uwe Krupp thing kind of screwed us out of getting Jagr for whatever, but that would have been fun to see. And boy, talk about changing the trajectory of hockey history as we know. Imagine Jagr as an Islander. That would have been pretty crazy.
There was like a situation, I guess, I'm trying to remember what year it was, where I thought the Islanders were going to get, for some reason, Sheldon Soure. Like, I don't know what it was that convinced me that he was, and I always loved him. Very handsome guy and great power play quarterback. And for some reason, like, I always just thought he was going to come to the Islanders. And in his prime, I mean, he's not on the same level as Jagr and Francis, but for some reason his name jumped out to me when I saw this question, because I just, for some reason, I always thought the Islanders were going to have a chance at him. I can just picture him in the Islanders, and I know he played with the Oilers, so this is similar uniform, but like, I can just picture him in an Islander uniform for some reason.
We had a question too. And again, I thought I had all this here, but somebody asked it was you. Who was like, who is a guy who you always thought should have been or would have been an Islander? And my answer was Scott Gomez was always the guy.
And he was close. That Drury Gomez summer was something. And the answer is not going to, it's going to sound incredibly strange, but just someone who I always, there was one offseason where Matthew Darche was a free agent and the Islanders were like linked to him. And I kept reading about him. Like, I'll just say Matthew Darche because I felt like this guy was always destined to be an Islander, especially in the snow era when he was like bargain hunting all the time. And I was like, it was probably before Staple was on the beat that the Islanders were like linked to him anytime. He was a free agent every year. Him and Glenn Metropolit were always like, what free agents can the Islanders like realistically expect to go after? It's like, here are some exciting names. Matthew Darche, Glenn Metropolit. And so those two guys.
Man, I wish we could do a Weird Islanders on Glenn Metropolit. He just, I remember that guy. He just brings me right back to that sort of early 2000s time. Carl asks, each pick the top five Islanders alums you want to see at UBS for an alumni game. that haven't come back yet. I don't remember off the top of my head who has and hasn't come back yet. His answers are great ones. Jason Blake, Wade Dublowitz, Ole Kavasha, Brendan Witt, Kenny Johnson. This is really up your alley. I mean, yeah. Did you have five guys picked right off the bat, or
I think Dublowitz is probably number one on everyone's list.
Right.
And this is a question that's asked all the time on you know, sports talk radio and stuff. Mm. Dublowitz definitely one. I think Kavasha is a really strong answer for this one as well. Of course, Evgeny Nabokov, Lubo Visnovsky.
Yeah.
I don't know if Franz Nielsen's been back because he's been retired, but you know, Janssen for sure. So I would go just have a couple different names. It would be Dublowitz, Nabokov, Visnovsky, Kavasha, and our man Franz.
Yeah. Franz was the first guy that came to my mind. Visnovsky's a good one. I would say that. I would go back, try to go back even a little bit further. I don't know if Ken Baumgartner been back. He would get a huge pop. I know Vakota's back, and just to see him and Vakota together in a luxury box, I think would drive people completely bonkers.
Has Chris Osgood been back?
I mean, with the Blues, I guess, yeah. Probably, but yeah, I don't think.
I would like to see him too.
Oh, Ray Ferraro is another one. He's always working on those games, and I wish Sportsnet would just give him a day off or whatever. Just let him come here. Come on, man. Let us cheer Ray Ferraro again. That's not five, but those are my top guys right there. That's a great question, and hopefully we see some more of them. Rob, who goes by Isles Fan, says, if you had a choice of a former Islander to meet, who would it be and what question would you ask him? Well, to me, the answer is always my all-time favorite, Pat LaFontaine, and I would probably present him with my Buffalo Sabres Pat LaFontaine starting lineup figure for him to autograph. I don't know. But as we talked about last week, I kind of get starstruck. Like, I've met G.I. Joe writer Larry Hama three times, and I think I've said maybe four words to him in all three of those times combined. So if I was ever in a room with Pat LaFontaine, I probably wouldn't actually get out any words to say anything. I don't know how you speak to a guy who's meant that much to you, but he's the guy I would like to meet. I never really got a chance to meet him. I walked past him once when I was an intern with Stan Fischler, and that was about as close as I got. So who do you probably have a couple of guys that you...
Yeah, I think you know, go right back to would be, you know, Wade Dublowitz. And I just ask him, you know, why haven't you kind of like leaned into, or do you realize, it'd be a two-parter, do you realize your cult status here? Also, Trent Hunter has never been back. He's also on the list.
Yeah.
Do you realize his, you know, your iconic stature among Islander fans? And if you do, you know, why aren't you around more? Is there something that happened? Is it just something you're not comfortable with? Whatever. You know, we basically ask if Wade Dublowitz is listening to this podcast every episode because it comes up. So I'll ask it again and then let him know, Wade, if you are out there. We really want to know. We got to beat the Talking Isles guys to the Wade Dublowitz interview.
That reminds me, actually. Another answer would be Ryan Smith, to ask him the same question. do you understand like what you meant, what that trade meant to the Islanders? He probably would.
And ask him like if he remembers going to the airport, the absolute dichotomy of the airports the juxtaposition of leaving the Edmonton one, throngs of media, people crying, fans with jerseys, I think he landed at MacArthur.
LaGuardia. Yeah.
LaGuardia. Yeah. Landed at LaGuardia. One person there recognizes him.
Has he ever kept in touch? Has he kept in touch with the guy in the Jets hat? Anyway, that's a good question, actually. Asher asks a question that is 100% right up your alley. Why'd they waive Jason Weimer? I feel like we never got an answer there. I don't remember his exit at all. So I don't know. Take it away.
This was one of my favorite questions. not just of this episode, just ever. Because it's a great question. I remember, when the Islanders were the year after they had made the playoffs for that first time, you know, they were in the mix again, and Snow was going to make a big move at the – not Snow, Jesus. Milbury was going to make a move at the deadline. And before the deadline, they traded Branislav Meze for Jason Weimer. So they gave up a – when was Meze pick? 10? He was a big pick. They gave up a big, big prospect for him. And, of course, I think a couple months later, they also had traded Brad Isbister for Yanni Nienema. So this was an active deadline for the Islanders. Weimer and Nienema. Good God. And then he kind of just disappeared in the middle of the next season. And there was no answer there. I think he ended up with the Wild. His next team. So, I mean, it's a great question. I think there was no reason to that 2003, 2004 team didn't have much forward depth, and Weimer definitely had a good role. He would have been the difference against the Senators, and the Islanders would have, against the Lightning. They would have won that playoff series with Weimer instead of the guys they had.
I don't know if he's on our weird Islanders list, but maybe we should do one on him because he has a weird.
He's definitely a weird one.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on. I mean, more Jason Weimer, more meets the eye than when it comes to Jason Weimer, I guess. Dan asks, how did each of you end up an Isles fan? And if someone influenced you in that direction, will you ever forgive them? That's a great way to word that question. I feel like I've told my story before. So, I mean, I don't know if we've ever heard yours at all. How did you become an Islanders fan?
I guess so. When I was growing up, I loved hockey. I really liked Mighty Ducks, and I actually really liked the Anaheim Mighty Ducks for like when I was like 5 and 6. I loved Geeky Bear, and I loved Solani and Korea, and I loved that team, and I loved the jerseys. I just started that's how I started to get into hockey. Was like everybody else through the Anaheim Ducks. Eventually, like, my oldest brother David is a big Islander fan. I'm one of five, and I have two older brothers. My oldest brother David is an Islander fan. The one in between us, my brother Kevin, he's a big Ranger fan. My brother David kind of just convinced me, I guess, to go to Islander games, went to Islander games, not convinced me, but I would just go because you can't go to the Garden. You couldn't go to the Garden back then either. Nobody could afford it. So we went to Islander games, and I would go with my brother and a couple cousins who were big Islander fans that are older than me. And they loved Darius Kasparaitis, they loved Pierre Turgeon, they loved Ziggy Palfy. And then basically 2000-2001 team started. I can remember going to games watching like Wade Flaherty in goal, I think. And we got even before that, we got a Tommy Soderstrom stick, like my brother got one. And so I thought that was really cool. That kind of cemented me as a fan. And then that I was 11. For the 2000 to the start of the 2001-2002 season, so like that's kind of, I guess, when you start to realize your sports and what being a fan is like, and that team just sucked me in. So the answer is so my brother David, but also Michael Pekka and Alexei Yashin. I know I will never forgive Pekka and Yashin and Kavasha for what they did to me.
Yeah, because it's interesting. We always talk about it. Like, you kind of came up as a fan during a really sort of fallow time. So it's always kind of interesting that, how do people become Islanders fans during a time when they just stunk, like they weren't making the playoffs? But I guess lots of brothers and whatever, would influence you that way.
Block. I mean, that's the beautiful thing. Like, the Islanders, and that's kind of what I was talking about with like mending fences earlier, is like the Islanders are the whole point of the Islanders is that they're accessible, right? They're a team that played down the block from Long Islanders. And they need to make sure, like, just because they're moving to a building, they have more money, that they don't lose that ethos. Yeah. And I don't think Lamoriello gives a shit about that ethos. Like, he wants to build a winner. So they just need to make sure that doesn't get kind of taken away, because Trotz totally understood that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And actually, we have a question about that coming up soon too. But my story, I'm from sort of post-dynasty era, and that was just what you did back in the 80s. You went to Islanders games. And I always say that, I started watching this team when they were part of the community. Like, they were part of the pride of the community. You weren't like the one Islanders fan at your job. Like, I've been in every single job I've ever had, or, the one Islanders fan on your block or in your friend group. Like, everybody knew what was going on with the team all the time. Everybody knew when they were slumping or who this young rookie was. Just, they were just part of the conversation. And my dad likes sports, but he's not like a fan of one team. He just sort of watches whatever's on TV, because it's like not some detective show or interminably boring Italian talk show that my mom watches. My dad has also probably never seen the end of a sporting event in about 35 years, because he always falls asleep. But so he wasn't like an Islanders fan, but they were there. They were the local team, and he would get tickets from dudes he worked with, and he would take me. I was as his only son, and we would go, and it was terrifying and exciting all at the same time. But, back then too, like, we went to the Coliseum. This was, in the mid 80s, you went to the Coliseum for everything. Islanders games, wrestling, Disney on Ice, ice capades, circus, you name it, whatever was going on there, concerts, you just went, because there was just less options on TV. So I don't blame him for putting me there, but you know, that's the local team. That's the team you root for. I always find it kind of weird that, you know, people would grow up on the island and root for the Rangers. It's like, no, this is your local team here. So you really should be rooting for these guys, as hard as it is sometimes. but that's it. But yeah, my dad, he and I used to watch, the Super Bowl or the World Series, just so he could basically talk about it with the dudes at work. They were really more into the Italian national soccer team. And I remember going to visit him at work, and they always had, I think they won the World Cup, I think, in like 1986 or 85 or something like that. And they had a big poster of the Azzurris in the office there. So that was his big thing. But yeah, if he's seen the end of a game in the last 30 years, I'd be shocked. He also doesn't watch movies because he falls asleep too. That's a whole other story. But that's a great question. Tristan, our good friend, he's a very vocal fan. He's been a fan of ours for a long time from across the pond. He asked, when was the last time the Islanders brought a tear to your eye? He said it could be either good or bad when I asked for a little clarification. I'm not one to really cry at sporting events, but I will say that I've watched Game 6 against the Lightning from last year a couple of times, or at least the highlights. And I have to collect myself every once in a while, because it's like, that was heavy. That was really heavy. And like the outpouring of emotion in that game, which resulted in a lot of stuff being thrown on the ice, if we can remember, is a lot, and still is to this day. Just, I remember, it's only a year ago, but I remember just a tidal wave of just a million emotions all coming out at once, and just my body just sort of shut down. I don't know if tears happen, but it's still pretty heavy to this day. So that's, I know it's a recent one, but that's it. That was a big one,
Yeah, I think that's probably the last time they made me cry. The first time was probably the Sean Bates penalty shot. And then also, I know I cried my eyes out when they lost that game 7 in my bedroom. And my mom was like, you have like school tomorrow and you need to collect yourself and figure it out. It's not that big a deal. But I mean, it happens a lot to me. Like I said a couple times in the show already, I'm a huge, huge loser. I think I remember crying when the Islanders played the Dublowitz Easter Sunday, of course. Cried for that one. Happiness. Probably cried when John Madden scored to tie the game up. So I probably cried like 6 times during that game. But yeah, I could go through, we could do an entire episode on it, the moments, but it happens a lot. But yeah, the first one I can remember was Bates, and the last one I can remember was Game 6 against the Lightning.
Yeah, that was a big one. First time, I don't even remember. I think I was just beaten into submission very early. I saw so many games as an intern for them and for Stan that I don't even remember. But that one's a heavy one. Also, it doesn't get talked about a lot, but not so much the game against the Panthers where he scored, but the Tavares goal in overtime against the Caps. I remember also being like, kind of like that game 6 against the Lightning.
I know I definitely cried that game because that was going to be the last game at the Coliseum. I had like a picture of myself crying. I have a lot of pictures from that game that I need to get like framed because I snuck onto the ice before the game and like on the bench and was just like taking pictures all over the Coliseum. That was another on the list.
Yeah. It's not as heavy as the Bovillier, but it was close, especially at the time. Francis, another loyal listener, asks us a question that literally, as I told him, could be the basis for an entire other podcast. He asks, what's the weirdest piece of Islanders merch or memorabilia you own? I don't have a ton of Islanders merch. I guess, I don't know if it's weird, but I do have every issue of Islanders Game Time magazine, which I used to write for. I don't know if that's really considered merch or memorabilia. I think I'd have to say my pretty rare, he wasn't an Islander at the time, but he obviously always will be considered by me as an Islander. My 1998 Nagano Olympics Team USA Pat LaFontaine action figure. I'm mad at myself that I lost the helmet and stick somewhere during one of my many moves. But I have the figure still. It looks absolutely nothing like Pat LaFontaine. I got it at the Kmart in Grand Central Station. In Penn Station, again, on my way home from work with Stan. And I should have left it in the box. It was really dumb of me. Then I would still have the stick. So I'm going to go with that because nobody remembers those figures were made. They didn't make a ton. I think I made a Gretzky one. They might have made an Amonte one, but I have the LaFontaine one, of course.
Yeah, for me, I'm looking around my room right now, like my office, and the answer has to be my Chris Osgood keg tap.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's incredibly strange. I found it on eBay once. It's just it's Chris Osgood making a stacked pad save, and it's a tap for like a bar.
That's cool
to pull pints with. And then the honorable mentions go to my Franz Nielsen game used hockey shorts from the first black jerseys. So wow. The shorts that, yeah, I'm looking at those right now. And then I have a Brian Trottier poster that's up in frame that it says, if you really believe in America, prejudice is foul play. And then it's got a signature under there. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I can picture that two pack stave right now because I have the Todd McFarlane Chris Osgood action figure from years ago. And he's making that exact same save. You mentioned eBay, and I just, you know, my favorite thing, this stuff isn't usually weird, but like my favorite thing is going to flea markets or garage sales or whatever and finding Islander stuff out in the wild. So I have a puck on my desk right here. I have a pendant too that I found in just random flea markets here in New Jersey. So it's just, you know, they're not weird in the sense that the item itself is weird, but it's just weird that somehow these things, you know, whatever happened in their life, they ended up in a flea market in Jersey in 2021 or 22. So I always find that kind of fun. John, who goes by Oleg Kavasha on Twitter, good friend of ours, really great guy. He asks, I guess this is a question for me because you're not a big comic book guy. Which Islander looks like he's an unused X-Men member Jim Lee designed in 1990? And why is it Andrew Lee? Lee would be a good one. My other answer would be Eric Cairns. Still big, tall guy, you know, he's got that gray hair and his head is kind of like square shaped, which is kind of like a Jim Lee thing. I was thinking like they always have like square heads. So they go. When I first read this, I thought he wrote not Jim Lee, but Rob Liefeld. And I was going to write back, they need more pouches. There's not enough pouches, which is the Rob Liefeld thing for anybody. But yeah, so he's going to go with Anders Lee. I'm going to go with Eric Cairns. Both not bad answers. KV asks, Shaq's Big Chicken or classic Coliseum hot dog? I got to be honest, I don't know if I've ever had a hot dog at the Coliseum. I ate a lot of popcorn there, and it was always too salty. So I haven't had Shaq's Big Chicken yet. Not a fan of blue cheese, but I would get it without that. But I've heard good things about it. My personal favorite Islanders food item of all time is actually from Barclays Center, and it was from Carla Hall's kitchen. She had like the fried chicken kitchen. Carla Hall was on Top Chef. She was on The Kitchen, I think, is the show here or whatever it is. She's been on TV forever, basically, for a long time now. And that chicken from that place was fantastic. I don't even know if it's still open. But yeah, Carla Hall's, if you're in Barclays for something, check out Carla's Kitchen if you can, because that chicken was really great. Have you tried either of these two things? I mean, you've had hot dog.
I've had a ton of Coliseum hot dogs and they're delicious. So that's the answer there. It's I do kind of miss the Coliseum food. One of my favorite Islanders ways to explain the how small market the Islanders were during most of my life was, I remember when they got this is probably what 2009, maybe 2007. So ballpark food was starting to become more elevated, let's say. The Islanders got a Subway in there.
Oh, yeah.
Arena, like Subway.
It was like a stand.
Yeah, it was a stand and had two sandwiches, and it was the biggest deal to the team. Like, they were like, make sure if you're going to go to Subway, you get there early because the line is going to be long. Like, they thought it was like this really, really innovative thing that was happening. I think I probably ate there a couple of times, but yeah, the Coliseum hot dogs where they tasted like NASA Coliseum, which is delicious.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it just occurred to me, like, I don't know if I've ever had a hot dog there, but lots and lots and lots and lots of popcorn. Big Lloyd, who is another loyal listener, asks if I'm going to start writing a sequel to the Tao Trots called Lane's Learnings. The answer is hell no, I am not. No more of these things. Please, I can't take it anymore. I am working on the next season of Islanders Award Winners. It is going painfully slowly. I'm hoping to get them out sometime early next season if I can. The writing process is what takes a long time, and I'm working on one right now, but I think people are going to like it. We got some award winners that I guarantee people don't remember ever happened, plus a couple that are, you know, seasons for the ages. So hopefully people like it when it comes out. But no more Tao Trots, no more free agency encyclopedias, none of this stuff. No offense to Lane Lambert, but it ain't happening. He seems like a smart guy. Seems like a very erudite speaker, but no thanks. somebody named LH Hockey. Oh, I'm just kidding. It's Dom. Everybody knows it's Dom. He asked, who was spotted skating at Iceworks this week? Oh, always a good question around the Islanders. It's probably Radek Martinek, but maybe it's Miro Shatan. I think Slovakia is playing at some tournament right now, right?
Yeah, he's busy with Slovakia these days. Yes, so I'm sure Martinek's, it's the Martinek Seidenberg pair.
Yeah.
They're still there. And I will say, so this is an interesting question, because I think that next year that crew is going to grow. I think we're going to see maybe a full-scale six defenseman unit here, plus skating at Icework with Martinek, Seidenberg, Andy Green, Big Z, and then of course you got Cairns and Matt Carpenter, who are always skating at Iceworks too. It's just, you know, when Islanders, you know, when they retire, they go to the big Iceworks in the sky, so that's who's skating at Iceworks this week.
Yeah, I mean, if Green and Chara settle on Long Island, I'll be shocked. But if they did, 100%, they're gonna, maybe Seidenberg is enough to get them to go do that and stay there. So that would be something. But I think of Iceworks. I mean, how have they not renamed Iceworks Radek Martinek Arena? I don't understand. Who spent more time there than him? I don't. Dom also asked, can the Barry Trotz era be better understood as the Simon Belmont era? This is obviously a reference to my favorite video game series of all time, Castlevania. I guess what he's getting at is, like, in Castlevania, at least the classic Castlevania games, the idea is that Dracula returns once every 100 years. So some member of the Belmont family has to fight him, kill him, so that he comes back 100 years later and menaces their great-great-grandchild or whatever. I hope not. But if it is, then this would be, I guess, the Castlevania 2 sort of era of Islanders hockey, with Al Arbor being sort of Castlevania 1. So we'll have to see who ends up being Castlevania 3. The timeline is all off, but I don't know. I hope not, is what I'm saying, even though I love both the Islanders and Castlevania. Mike Livak, another good friend of ours from Lighthouse Hockey at I Can See for Isles, asks, how much wood could a Clutterbuck chuck if a Clutterbuck could chuck wood? The answer is, I don't know, because he'd get hurt. And then he would get hurt, and then he would come back and would chuck some wood, and then you'd be like, oh, that was actually a pretty good amount of wood. But, you know, he got hurt, so I don't know.
It just goes to show, like, he's got one of the more underrated hockey names, and it's we take it for granted now because he's been with the Islanders for so long.
He's an alliterative name too. I completely didn't even think of Ben Martin. Casey Sinkis too.
So is he. The whole line is alliterative.
Yeah,
what have we been doing here?
So, well, that's a perfect segue to this question here, which is from Will, who asks, do you worry the Isles' weirdness is behind them and they're bound to be a normal functioning franchise, and is that a good thing? I don't think, as we've seen the last week and a half, I don't think the Islanders will ever be a normal functioning hockey team. But they'll always be weird, only because of where they are. And it's just such, and their connection with the fan base and, you know, the dynasty and the whole roller coaster history of the franchise. Like, I don't think they'll never not be weird. There are certain teams that are never weird and certain teams that will never not be weird. The Anaheim Ducks, to me, will always be weird. Like, again, the suburban team. The Winnipeg Jets will always be weird to me as well. But I don't think the Islanders are ever not going to be weird.
Yeah, and I actually understand this question pretty well, too. Like, because there were times where it did feel like, oh, man, like, they're becoming way too normal. This is getting strange. And then, yeah, like, they just do something. So the weirdness, I can just not imagine them ever getting past it. Like, it's they, like you said, they're a product of their environment. They're a team of the community, and communities are weird. So it, like, you know, you can really not be weird in a city because you got 8 million people in it, and you can, you know, hide the weirdness much better with the kind of big marketing functions. But the Islanders just will never be a team. a team like the Islanders is just, it's the Sabres too. Like, you think of them much more as like a team that has, you know, they're much like, they're like the VFW, like, you know, like, that's like, we went to the Nassau Coliseum. The Coliseum was just like one big VFW where you'd go and you'd have like fare for like a Sweet 16 or a communion or whatever, some sort of catered function. Whereas all the non-weird teams, they go to, you know, these big kind of catering halls. And I'd always much rather be at the VFW.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, they're also, I mean, the Islanders have that direct connection to the 70s and that kind of weird and woolly WHA period. So it always kind of makes them weird. No sleep till playoffs. Isles Ordy at Isles Ordy asks for the true nightmare fuel here. Bigger nightmare scenario, Rangers or Leafs winning the cup. Ultimate kick in the nuts, Trotz leading Toronto to a cup. Well, it seems like Sheldon Keefe is going to keep his job.
Yeah, why would you ever fire Sheldon Keefe? Yeah. I mean, he's just
unbelievable. He's got so much respect in the handshake line.
Yeah, oh, my God, this guy is just, he's growing as a coach. Every year he's got them to the game seven again, but this time they didn't embarrass themselves. So
we should mention that Elliot Friedman wrote that Trotz was apparently interviewing today with the Winnipeg Jets. What kind of interview are you going to give Barry Trotz, dude? He's the third winningest coach in the history of the league.
I think the question, it's probably just like, hey, Barry, we have two questions. One, do you want to coach next year? Right. Two, okay, you do. Then do you want to coach us?
He interviews you. I don't understand. But
and I will say that if he does coach next year, Winnipeg, sign me up, please. Sure. That would be great. Just let nothing. You know, as long as he's in that Western Conference and coaching the Jets, that's beautiful.
Yeah. As for the question, I mean, I throw it to you, like Rangers or Leafs winning the cup. Fortunately, the Leafs can't do it this year, thank God.
Right. But. And I think that's why I'm saying the Rangers now. But like, I go back and forth on it, honestly, because the Leafs thing is there's an expiration date on it, right? It's when their Johnny Toronto leaves. Once he's gone, not that I'll stop hating them, but I won't be afraid of Gary Bettman handing him the cup before the Islanders get one. So. So probably the Rangers, just because there's only so many more kicks at the can that the Leafs have, and this Rangers, anytime the Rangers are in the playoffs, it's I convinced myself that they're going to win the cup, and so right now I'm pretty horrified.
Yeah, if the thing about the Leafs, well, if they trade Tavares and then they win the cup, I think I would be fine with that. Yeah.
As long as it's not with him, I really just won't care.
Exactly. But you know what's weird, and this happened with the Red Sox when they won the World Series and the Cubs. Like, you don't realize that not winning for so long becomes your team's identity. And I know it sucks as a fan, but like, once you break that, you're just another team. Like, I mean, I remember very vividly the Red Sox going 86 years without winning a World Series, and it was like, okay, then they won, and it was like, well, now what? And then anytime they complain about the curse of the Bambino, it's like, dude, shut up. You just won. You know, and the Cubs too. Like, I watched the Cubs win a World Series the first time in 100 years. And now the Cubs are just any old team. They're playing an old ballpark somewhere. Like, they're just, I don't know, whatever happened to them.
And that's why I never understand why neutrals root for the Leafs. Because once this is over, once they get past round one, once they win the cup, it's gone. That is not a thing anymore.
Right.
So, well, may it continue.
Yeah, that's right. I agree 100%. Yeah, totally. And then the last response here, not a question, but it's from Matt, who is, again, a longtime listener and follower. And he just wanted to congratulate us on 200 episodes. So thanks, Matt. We really appreciate that. And we want to thank everybody for listening to either between 1 and 200 episodes or 202 episodes of this show. We really appreciate it. And thanks again, everybody, for sending in these great questions. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad we got questions that we could actually answer and not, you know, stuff about the inner workings of the Islanders, because we absolutely have no idea what we're talking about when it comes to that stuff. But this was great. We got a lot of questions that were definitely right in our wheelhouse, which is nice because that means people have connected with us and know what we're capable of.
Yeah, and at episode 4, because we do one mailbag every 202 episodes. So at episode 404, we'll make sure to get some more Maple Leafs questions in there, because I really want to talk more. We're on an hour and 45 minutes here, but I have, you know, another 30 minutes in me to talk Leafs, but I'll save that for another time.
Yeah, this, I mean, when we talked about doing this, who could have possibly expected all this other stuff to talk about? So this wasn't meant to be a basically triple album episode, if you will. But I'm glad it worked out. And again, everybody's got plenty of time with no Islanders playoff games on the horizon. So
and thank you for the questions. I thought, you know, we were not going to get many. There's one that wasn't really a question, but just a, from another, a listener in from England. He's now over here. Gavin Taylor, who's a Leeds United fan, and Leeds and Everton are two of the three teams in the relegation battle right now. So you know, we're both hoping that it's Burnley that go down and not Everton. And he asked me if I'm an Everton fan, just because being an Islander fan isn't miserable enough. and I do just, and the question, when the people ask me about Everton, like the story about me becoming a fan, an Everton fan, it goes back to 1998 when my family almost moved to England. The reason, the reason I do enjoy them so much is because there are a lot of Islander kind of parallels you can draw with. They're in a two-team city. The other team is a lot more money, and then the Everton is much more like kind of community-based. So I just wanted to mention Gavin before I forgot. And, you know, if we'll just hope that Burnley is the team that gets relegated.
I really don't have time for this team anymore. I wish I could get into soccer. I throw it on Saturday mornings, but I don't really know what's happening. So I just try and enjoy it. But I always try and root for Everton because that's your team.
Thank you. We'll need you on Thursday.
Oh, okay. You got it. And that's a perfect segue to let everybody know to listen to Mike's soccer podcast, The Wonder Goal, from Action Network. Also listen to Line Change. You guys just put out your second round preview today. So check that out. And where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lee Basket with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lee Basket if you don't already. You can read his work at the Action Network. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Obviously had a lot going on the last couple of days. We will be back later this week with a new Weird Islanders. We got a great guest. This Trotz thing really screwed everybody's schedule up, man. It's been a nightmare just to get everybody together, but we're going to do that this week. And we might actually follow that up with another Weird Islanders before getting back on schedule.
I met out with Mike Smith, a Weird Islanders alumni guest, the day after Trotz was fired. And, you know, because I had to go into the city for work. And so we talked a couple weeks before about how I'd be in that day. And then, of course, it ends up being almost like going to a two-person wake, because we just went to some like dime a dozen bar in Midtown, and I had a tea and he had a couple drinks, and it felt very much like a wake in that and just very unsuspected wake. So I do want to say that at this point, like, I feel like I've gone through all the stages of grief for Trotz, and now I'm into the part where I'm like just truly appreciating that we had him, and it was just so great.
Yeah, this is where you turn yourself over to a higher power and just be like, I'm glad that happened, that the kismet brought us all together for this one brief time. But that's a cool story. Oh, is that when you were at Rudy's? Is that what you were saying?
I was at Rudy's on Monday. And then I had to go into the city Monday and Tuesday for work last week. Rudy's is just the best.
All right, so I'll end you with this. A better hot dog, Coliseum or Rudy's?
Oh, Rudy's. Rudy's is just the best, man. Those free hot dogs with a $3 beer, served with a scowl from the bartender, who's, you know, that's kind of part of their kitsch, I guess. Is like, not that they're mean, but like they're just like, here's your hot dog.
You can't miss Rudy's. Just walk up the west side, and when you see the pig, stop and go in and have a hot dog and drink. Yeah, classic place. Anyway, that's about it for today. Boy, I think we've covered enough. But we'll be back with the Weird Islanders. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again for the great questions. Maybe we'll move it up in the schedule to something earlier than 202 episodes. next round that we do. But until next time, take care, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.